The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Many of you know that I've been away for the last couple of weeks and then thinking about what to talk about today, I decided that I didn't want to assume that I knew what you should hear. So I thought that might be a good day for some questions and discussion. So if you have any topics or interests or concerns, it'd be nice for me to hear what they are and find out what's on your minds and in terms of practice and meditation and such things. Yes, please, Mary. Yeah, wait for the mic. Do we have two mics?
No.
Or we kind of have both?
Just one word.
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
So you're concerned with forgiveness. It's a good word. It's a great concept. I think of forgiveness, I like the giving part of forgiveness. And the pardon also, you know, in French has the word to give in it. So I think of, I like to think of forgiveness as being an act of generosity. And there have been situations where I thought I forgave someone, but I was just kind of neutral. And it wasn't quite it. So I think that for me, in my mind at least, forgiveness involves coming to a place of generosity of spirit towards someone, generosity of heart towards someone. And so what does it take to do that? And the first thing it takes is an interest to do that. It might be very difficult to actually do it, but it's very powerful just to have the interest, the desire. I wish I could. And then things begin moving and shifting and digesting with that wish. And I think that one of the motivations for forgiveness is that helps a lot of people is to think about this way, is we're not necessarily doing it for the other person, but we're doing it for ourselves. Because the need for forgiveness exists when there's resentment or anger. And if there's no resentment or anger, if the heart's not closed in that kind of way, there's no need for forgiveness. And the movement towards forgiveness is to release us. Our own movement towards forgiveness is to release us from our held heart, our closed heart, our tight heart, our ways of being kind of shut down or being angry or resentful. So the movement to being forgiving is to partly to open up that spirit or heart within ourselves. And sometimes it's helpful also to think that the person doesn't have to know that you've forgiven them. That also can help, because sometimes people hold back forgiving thinking the person doesn't deserve it. You know, if the person knows, they'll get away with it or something. Forgiveness is not condoning, it's not excusing anybody's behavior. I think forgiveness, if someone has harmed you, forgiveness doesn't deny that harm or ignore it. I think forgiveness recognizes it's there and doesn't try to excuse it away. But there's a kind of wise way of seeing and looking at that and finding some way to open up that generosity of heart again towards that person. Requires a fair amount of wisdom, and it's not something we should do kind of naively, but it's really beautiful, and I've been very inspired by some of the wonderful examples of people who've been able to forgive all over the world. What's it called in South Africa? Is it the Truth and Reconciliation process? In places like Guatemala, I've read accounts of people there who, after all the atrocities there, are people able to forgive. And here in this country, there's beautiful examples of people who've been victims or relatives of victims who have been able to turn around and find it very meaningful to forgive the person who committed the crime, even murder sometimes, and for everyone's benefit. So I think it's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
forgiveness of a family member whom you know will continue to offend and who are destructive?
I think we have to be very careful about forgiving if the harm is continuing. It doesn't make sense to have someone standing over you, beating you up, and say, well, I forgive you. Well, they're hitting you, right? So if it continues, other things might be needed. Forgiveness works best when the person who has committed the harm has separated themselves from it. Say, well, this, I understand that this was wrong. I'm not going to do it anymore. At least they have that understanding. If they continue to do it, then perhaps there are other things that are needed besides forgiveness. Or perhaps what's needed then is something much more private inside of you, which is to find out what it is that's going on with you and your heart, your mind, what's your attachments, what's your fear, your anger, what's going on inside of you. And then you do your own inner work to freeing yourself of that. And freeing yourself of that, maybe it's not exactly the same as forgiveness, but it has the same inner function of freeing you from the ways in which you've closed down because of it. And then once you've done that inner work on yourself, then you can go back into that situation and maybe have a better sense of what is needed. And sometimes what's needed is not forgiveness, but perhaps a very strong no. Close the door on the person. Say, if your behavior is like that, you can't come to my house. It doesn't work. Until you somehow step... Until somehow you understand or are committed to not acting that way, you can't come into my house. Or, you know, something very dramatic sometimes happens. Sometimes it's not that dramatic. Sometimes it's more dramatic. Sometimes we call the police on our relatives. You know, and then when they're sitting in jail, we forgive them. You know, when they've had a change of heart. But without some kind of change of heart, it's in the other person. I think forgiveness has to be done even more wisely, more carefully. Yeah?
How long is...
Oh, yes, but please wait for the mic. Is there one over here now? No.
There's another one here.
Nick, can you move? Yes.
Thank you. My name is Ron. Along the same lines, this week the Olympic torch is coming to San Francisco, the Bay Area, and the approach that we might consider in regard to what's going on in Tibet and China and how we might approach that. If you have some comments to share, I'd appreciate it.
I don't know what I want to say here in this context, but you know, to follow up on this discussion about forgiveness, one of the real poisons in ourselves and in the world is anger and hate, and I don't think it works to respond to hate or anger with or animosity, hostility with further hostility, and so. I think that anybody who wants to do some kind of social political action, my hope and wish is that they would have an inner discipline, an inner practice that would help them keep them free from fear in some kind of neurotic way, free from hostility, free from anger, and more than that, to practice loving kindness, to have a kind of kind, generous spirit. So in relationship to the Chinese, what's going on in Tibet, we have the Dalai Lama who talks about the Chinese as being his friends. His friends. You know, I think he says, you know, my friend's the enemy. So if that's what he says, there is this recognition that there's a problem there. You know, there's a conflict. He's not denying the conflict. But at the same time, he's saying he's looking at them as friends. He's looking at them with goodwill. So in terms of the torch coming to San Francisco, the Olympic torch, I can imagine different people coming up with different equations of what is a productive or helpful in this situation. But regardless of the choice people make, whether to go there and protest the torch or whether to do something else, I think it's really important to do the inner work. you know, it would be terrible if a lot of, you know, really angry people were there, standing there in the Buccadero, you know, and they had these wonderful photographs in the media of, you know, all these really hostile people, you know, kind of snarling at the torch. You know, that's one thing. It's a whole other thing if they could sit there and express their, you know, show their concern, their passion, passionate concern, but to show it with love or care. Wasn't it yesterday the 40th anniversary of Martin Luther King? Death, assassination? You know, so so here's an example of someone who dedicated his life, lost his life, and in some ways, you know, a beautiful life that was dedicated not just to be nonviolent, not to respond in a very passionate, aggressive, not aggressive, but passionate, full-on way to injustice in the world, but was dedicated trying to do that with love, you know, and to me it's very meaningful. So that's my response for now, unless you have more.
Thank you.
So right back here, back to Betsy. Oh, you go ahead.
One other thing about Martin Luther King that we just found out a couple of weeks ago about the family. His mother was killed while playing the piano at Ebenezer Baptist Church. I didn't know that for some reason. And it was by a mentally ill person. And his family refused to have that person go on trial, et cetera. And supposedly, that's what they said at the site at his home birthplace. So kind of an interesting way of looking at it. They just felt like that you don't put somebody like that in jail. There's other ways to deal with people.
Suzuki Roshi, who was this the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, his wife, his first wife, I guess, more or less, was killed by a mentally ill person, and in his temple, in the temple, and so you know, also an example. I think also he, you know, didn't want to have something, you know, terrible happen to that person. But it was a little bit of a mixed thing because it was after World War II, and there was a lot of homeless people, a lot of poverty and stuff in Japan. And against the wishes of his family, apparently, he invited this mentally ill person to come and live with him at their temple. And then when his wife was alone at home, the person killed his wife. So there's kind of a mixed thing there, this thing about the generosity of offering help to someone who needs help, but perhaps not doing it with the proper wisdom and understanding. And so how do we balance those things out is a tricky thing.
I was interested in Dwight's question, and it caused me to recall something that I have used in the Christian tradition, which is the forgive them for they know not what they do. I've used this to mixed effect in my own life. And my question is, I have noticed a slight uncomfortable feeling of an absence of humility when I use that. I mean, I go out in a gesture of not knowing. They know not, but I do. And I wanted to know if you could talk about humility and forgiveness, in particular when there cannot be resolution, whether it's Jesus on the cross or a family member that is going to live on with you for years to come. How can I deal with more effectively inner humility while I am implicitly making a judgment?
Oh, good. Well, that's a great question. I have to kind of digest a little bit to know what to say and what might be helpful to say in response. What comes to mind is that you don't find in Buddhism the kind of emphasis on humility as you find in Christianity. You evoked Christianity, so. But I don't think that means that, you know, Buddhists are supposed to be arrogant. It just, it's a very different understanding of person, religious life, the reference point for religious life, religious authority. It's almost a whole different radical worldview than Christianity, where humility is not such a big issue in the same way. However, being conceited is a big issue in Buddhism. And so being conceited or arrogant is something that it's a poison, it's a problem, it causes suffering. And so Buddhist practice certainly focuses on looking at very honestly at our conceit and then using the practice to help free us from it. The result of being freed of arrogance and conceit is what it is. If the goal, if the ideal is to be humble, then you might also let go of your conceit and your arrogance. But then you might take, a person might take on an artificial attitude. Oh, you know, poor little me, you know, I'm so small and little and, you know, I don't count. And so it's kind of almost like the pendulum goes too far. And in fact, in a Buddhist kind of psychology, humility would be seen as a form of conceit. So you're trapped. So good luck. And but the practice is the same in both situations. If there's kind of this humility as an attitude, as a stance, as a holding, or if there's arrogance, conceit as a stance, as a holding, then the practice is to look at that, find that holding, and then free us from the holding, and then go forth from there, and without necessarily defining what it is. Okay, so, oh, okay. Sonia, maybe, so I see Sonia's hand there. There's.
When I look at forgiveness while I'm meditating, I have two things that pop up. One is trust, and the other one is that I can't really see myself, or I don't feel it makes sense to spend time forgiving others for things that happened in the past, but to forgive myself, like kind of like give myself the freedom not to I hate this subject. give myself the freedom to to let go of hanging on to things that have happened. Uh-huh. And so I don't know if this is like forgiving others. I don't see it this way. But it's about me moving on.
Okay.
And trusting myself that I'm strong enough to do that. Because I can trust others in the sense of that things won't happen again or continue to happen or... does that make sense?
It makes sense. Makes some sense. In the sense that I think it's a very important what you're saying. And in my mind, it's, you know, a partial picture of what's possible. I think that being able to forgive oneself is a very important capacity, ability, and many times, even sometimes when people have done injustice to us or something wrong to us, there might be an element in which we've been participating in that, and we need to somehow forgive ourselves. What comes to mind is an embarrassing situation in my own life, where in India I was robbed of my traveler's checks. So that was, you know, pretty bad stuff. You know, to be robbed of it. But I had to forgive myself for being so foolish to trust the guy with my traveler's checks. I mean, I was conned out of them. That was a whole con job. And I was just so naive that I allowed myself to be conned. So I felt more, you know, upset with myself than the person who stole them, because how could I have done something so silly? And so there's often an element of that. How do we forgive ourselves for, you know? And if we can kind of free ourselves from our own inner resentment or anger towards ourselves, then we're probably going to be in a better position to take care of ourselves in the future. You know, when the other people come and want to take advantage of us or hurt us, then we're in a better position to say, no, now I know that I don't do that now. Seem okay? Response? Why don't you pass the mic there to Judy? And Judy, I'm sorry, you don't like being put on the spot.
But, don't you know? Yeah.
I know. I was wondering if you want to say a word or two about forgiveness yourself, rather than asking a question. And take your time if you want, before you talk.
I'm listening hard. I'm in the Christian tradition as well. And I'm remembering last year I had a family situation where I was invited to forgiveness. And today what I'm hearing is forgiveness meaning looking at where I have resentment and anger. That just makes so much sense to me, and I really like separating that from, oh, this person in my family whom I love very much said this to me and I was very hurt. So that's really what I'm listening to today.
Great, thank you. Oh, someone was waiting here. Anybody waiting?
Yes.
Please.
Again, that question, but is this on?
It's not on.
No. Sorry.
There we go. The question about family members, and I could just feel the electricity going through me. Not through me. I think that's so important because those patterns are so well worn. That those are the ones that really hurt because we know them from our childhood often.
Yeah.
And they're so hard to get rid of, and we spend so much energy trying to get rid of them that we start new patterns of trying to get rid of them that are just as painful. So when you were saying this about somebody who has recognized that they've wronged you and can approach you with an open heart, it's so much easier. But when somebody continues to hit you over the head with a cudgel out of their ignorance or whatever, I think it is ignorance, it seems to me you were saying, if I got you right, you were saying something about not that there wasn't a need for forgiveness there, but that the, I don't know, I got the sense that the energy was somehow different. And I just know from my experience when doing loving-kindness meditation, the energy is so much into gradually changing myself that that becomes the focus. That I come with new awareness to this poor individual who is so blind, that the energy is on my own understanding as opposed to my own resentment or my own closing off or my own inability to accept. I'm thinking of the Tibetan monks that were imprisoned. And when they would come out and weeping about all that poor karma, that bad karma those guards would have, and not at all focused on their own pain. And that's hard, I mean, you know, to weep for someone else who has physically hurt you. I don't know how you get to that point, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it still seems to me an element of forgiveness, but the focus is somehow different. The focus is on ourselves, understanding more.
I think in certain many ways that's a strength of Buddhist practice, is the strength is to be able to keep looking at ourselves and see what's going on here. So we become free of our own resentment and pain and fear and these things. Buddhism historically, I think, has been a little bit it's weaker in relationship to that. Buddhism as a tradition is weaker in the sense of how to act in the world, you know, and make a difference. It tends to be more introspective than extra. And, other traditions are more less introspective and more, what's the opposite of introspective? Extra special. But I think, you know, that's what we have the most control over, the most power over, is to affect ourselves in some deep way, in the most important area, I think. And then, and I think practicing loving kindness, practicing releasing these things from ourselves makes a big difference in how then we come back and relate to others. And sometimes we can make a big difference in the lives of others if we come with them with generosity and kindness than if we come with them with our fear or hostility. Even when people are hostile to us, I've been in situations where as long as I was locked in a kind of a resentment or anger or some kind of situation with them, the whole situation was locked as well. But if I kind of let go and had some sense of generosity or goodwill towards that person, I could see the person relax and the whole dynamic changed. But without that kind of goodwill on my part, I probably wouldn't have. You know, maybe if that person had goodwill before me, you know, if they beat me to it, I would have relaxed. I mean, that's happened also sometimes, you know, where I've been the recipient of someone's goodwill and it helped me relax. So doing our own inner work can make a difference out there. But you know, I think of there are situations where people are going to continue being hostile, aggressive, verbally violent, all kinds of things, because maybe there's mental illness or some kind of very, very deep trauma that keeps being relived or being re-expressed. And even if you come with as much loving kindness and you're most as relaxed and as open hearted as you can possibly imagine, it's almost an impossible situation to maintain it that way. And then the important Buddhist practice is not necessarily forgiveness, but forbearance. And forbearance, classically in Buddhism, is a very important practice. And forbearance is a practice where you don't try to go to forgiveness, or forgiveness or loving kindness is too big of a hurdle. Forbearance is much more humble. It's a practice of simply not giving in to the impulses of anger and hostility. And sometimes that's the best we can do, and it's very significant. So at times when someone is causing harm to us, we want to protect ourselves to the degree that we don't give in to our own anger and hostility. It doesn't mean that we become naive suckers or naive victims to continued harm. It means we try to respond in effective ways, but without turning our heart into a place of anger. So I think sometimes forbearance is a more important theme or a practice than forgiveness. And especially when we can't expect that the other people are going to change. Sometimes they don't. It's awful.
If I can just piggyback on that, it's almost like when I do loving kindness, sometimes I get invested on not only will I change, but the situation will change, and I can't trust that because the situation might not change. So what you're saying, the forbearance is more of a just determination not to go down a negative road.
Right. Yeah. And so as I said earlier, I think one of the strengths of Buddhism is this introspective quality. And one of the relationships to the introspective quality in our wider world, I hope, is also a willingness to certainly look more deeply, but more broadly, at the impact our own lives have on the world around us. And it's not just simply when we're angry and hostile, but also there's very subtle ways in which we are disrespectful of others, we discriminate against others, we cause harm for others, even if we don't intend it sometimes. And so hopefully this kind of deep inner work that we do is heightening our sensitivity to the real value and preciousness of everyone we encounter, no matter who they are, so that in that sense of value and importance of other people, that we're kind of keep looking and saying, how can I meet this person so I have very deep respect for them?
I had an experience where I was living alone, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I walked from my living room to my bedroom in the dark. And there was a man there, and he grabbed me and said, "Lady, I'm going to break your neck." And I also come from the Christian tradition, and I had heard that you're supposed to say Jesus Christ, and it would freak people out. So I said, "Sweet Jesus." And then the guy grabbed me, and I grabbed him, and I kept saying, "Forgive me for anything I've done. Forgive me that anybody else has done to you. Forgive me, forgive me, forgive me for anybody, for anything anybody else has done." And I just kept saying that like a mantra.
Wow.
And the whole thing chilled. He was on top of me and he was on my bed, but sort of like on the side on top of me. And the whole situation chilled, and he was just lying very quietly. And then he went for my underwear. And instead of fighting him, I fought. Instead of fighting this way, I fought that way. No, I fought. Well, anyway, the way I fought was to grab the lamp. And I turned the light on, and he left. And what
beautiful.
What amazes me is that I really did forgive. I mean, like, you know, like, I wonder, like, maybe do I have some sort of deep-seated anger still? No. And I think it's really weird.
Beautiful. And could you have planned that out ahead of time? Could you have planned that out?
No.
What in your background, what do you think that allowed you or in that circumstance did that come out of you? How are you prepared?
I just come back from a 1 week retreat in silent massage at Esalen.
How did that impact you? What impact did that week have on you that made it more likely?
I don't know, but before I went to Tassajara, Esalen was my spiritual home.
Uh-huh.
And I had a real connection with the ocean and the sun, and it was just very open and, you know, silent all week.
So you had you were pretty calm, centered.
I was cool.
You're cool.
And then the other thing is that I had, when I was lying on my bed and the sky's right here on top of me, quiet, I had this out-of-body experience where I looked down on myself and I saw myself as beautiful.
Hmm. Beautiful. It is beautiful.
And then I had a psychotic break 2 months afterwards.
is there a connection?
I think so.
Yeah. There's a few things that occurs in response. One is that, since I know a number of people who have had some kind of, harm like that, someone come to them to harm them in some way like that. And in the moment, they kind of thought of things to say or do they never could have planned. And the people I know, maybe because I hang around Buddhist circles, attributed to their meditation practice. The fact that they were calm and centered enough so that something deeper, some deeper understandings and deeper intuition could operate. People who were being ganged up on by some teenage guys in the projects in San Francisco. And the person turned to me and said, "Your mama would be ashamed of you." And that was enough. and they backed off. Someone else who was going to be raped at gunpoint said, "And you call yourself a Christian? Give me that gun." And some person here gave the gun, and then the person threw the gun into the bushes and ran. So there are examples like that. But I think that these things, even though they're kind of wise, kind of deep responses that can be helpful like that, I think that it impacts the psyche, the mind really, really deeply. And if you've ever been robbed at gunpoint or had some kind of crime, even some people, even if they have their car broken into or their home broken into, it feels like a very, very deep violation. That it's you probably need to do some deep inner work to process that, in order to. So, I can imagine that someone like you, going through that, speaks well for you and your abilities. But that some kind of processing was needed afterwards, and I don't know if you did besides in the hospital.
Yes, I had many hospitalizations, and what happened was that I am bipolar, and that just triggered the whole bipolar thing. Mm-hmm. And I went through a very, very hard time.
Glad you're here. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
So one more, maybe one more. Here, Carl in the back. Did I miss someone here? Oh, yeah, you were waiting. So maybe Fiona, she's been waiting so patiently with forbearance. Go ahead, Fiona.
Okay. What I was going to say before, and I'm very deeply moved by what you shared. But John Travis gave a little practice years ago at a retreat about, because someone asked about forgiveness, and he said he started the sittings with just two simple phrases. May I forgive those who have harmed me knowingly or unknowingly, and may I forgive myself for those I have harmed knowingly and unknowingly. And it seems like it sort of levels the playing field, because we don't know what our own actions may do or have done in the past, as well as what we perceive others have done or not done to us.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, sometimes rather than focusing on specific instances,
right,
that sometimes it's helpful just to kind of open it up more widely.
Mm-hmm. Just to be open.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. So then, Carl.
One of the techniques, I think, in this discussion for achieving the goals of forgiveness is we have to use our speech. We have to talk, usually. And what I've been troubled with recently is the usage of right speech and the guidelines for the usage of right speech. last evening I violated all those precepts and had a very unpleasant encounter. And even though I've been wondering how I would fulfill all the conditions of right speech, like not telling untruths or being harsh or divisive or always being kind and so forth, it would seem that I often feel that it would leave me completely vulnerable and that I would very much wind up being silent, and because that would be the only way that I could satisfy all of these conditions. And then I would leave myself vulnerable, and I would present a kindly countenance to someone who was not receptive or who thought that was a weakness and beat me up, so to speak, even more, took advantage of me even more, seeing that I was passive and not aggressive or assertive. So I have a conflict in my head about how to achieve a certain amount of self-defense and be seen as having a certain amount of respect for myself, standing up for myself and my rights, but at the same time not creating ill will or further negative effects by trying to follow right speech and failing. Because the whole concept seems extremely hard.
So is there a middle way between avoiding wrong speech, and is there a way of avoiding wrong speech and taking care of yourself at the same time? And you're concerned that if you avoid wrong speech, if you practice right speech, that somehow you'll be taken advantage of, or somehow you won't be able to take care of yourself. And it's possible that could happen. It takes, learning how to live a wise life, a good life, takes practice. And we learn partly through our mistakes. And so if we're afraid to make mistakes, then we probably won't learn. But if we take the time to learn from our mistakes, then perhaps we can make amends and do better in the future. So to look at your incident yesterday, and spend time reflecting on it, talking with friends about it, or just journaling about it, doing something, Not to feel bad about it, but to see what can I learn from that so I can try to do better in the future. So be forward-looking that way. How can I do better in the future, learning from that situation? And how could I have better taken care of myself without you, resorting to wrong speech? And I think that one of, and certainly, I don't know, standing up for oneself is exactly the right expression in Buddhism. But I think that having almost a ferocious saying no, saying this is not okay, I'm not going to accept this. You can't do that. If you continue doing that, I'm out of here. It can be done with tremendous passion and strength, but it doesn't have to be done with wrong speech. And one of the ways I think maybe to move in that direction is when you're looking for how to speak, it can be helpful to fall back on the idea of I statements. Use that as a reference point. If I spoke from my own perspective, how it is for me, as opposed to what I think the other person is like, then maybe it's more likely to be right speech. So, you know, sometimes if you tell someone, you know, when you speak that way to me, I feel really afraid. And is that what you're intending to do? It's to scare me. And can we talk about that a little bit? And chances are, if you say that to someone, or if I feel really hurt when you say that, when you do that, most people will stop. They're not going to kind of barrel ahead. And as opposed to saying, you say, oh, I'm really afraid when you say that. That makes a very different effect than saying, and then you can say, add to that, this really makes me afraid when you say this. And in fact, I'm so afraid that I don't think I can stay here with you if this continues. Or this, you know, something has to change. That's very different than feeling afraid, which I know some people who get afraid, and their response to fear is hostility and anger. And they lash out because they're kind of trying to push it away or cause harm, you know. And generally, those approaches are counterproductive. They tend to almost kind of guarantees people might go away. Sometimes anger is very effective to get people to go away, but in the bigger picture, it tends to be counterproductive. Tends to cause more harm in the bigger picture than benefit. So what you brought up was a very important topic. And my response just scratches the surface of it. So I wish I could be more complete, but... Yes. Okay, so one of the things you could do is... This is a plug. This is an advertisement. We had a wonderful testimonial about the value of going off for a week at Esalen.
You know, I want to add something.
Yes.
Yeah. The third part of that mantra was, I could love you. Mm. Not I love you, I could love you.
I could, if. If you.
I could love you, or I could love you.
Beautiful.
That component was in
beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So, so in our tradition, you know, the emphasis of self-understanding and becoming settled enough, calm enough, so that we can be more effective in our relationship to others. We put a lot of emphasis on meditation practices, you know. And one of the ways of really taking this further is to go on retreats. And retreats are very, very powerful and very effective. We're kind of a retreat tradition in many ways. And Inez Friedman here, she's going to stay behind now and at 11:15 for, I guess, an hour and a half, she's going to be here to discuss... anybody who wants to, the nature of retreats, what retreats are like, what you can, if you've never been on one, or if you'd like to hear what it's like for Inez to be on retreat, different kinds of retreats, people have different kinds of experiences of retreats, there are different kind of patterns of how retreats unfold for people, what to expect. So if you've never been on a retreat or relatively new to that world, it's your chance to kind of learn more about what it's like and have it demystified a little bit. So that's at 11:15, and then Saturday we have a one-day sitting here, 9 to 4:30. And so anyways, Mary, thank you for the word. I appreciate it. And for some time I've been thinking about giving a talk about forgiveness, but I just couldn't get my mind around where to get into the topic. So I was led to it today by you. So thank you.